Podcastlandia. Welcome to today's interview, and we are kicking off our thankfulness episode with a volunteer from OTW, because I think we can all agree that the thing we are the most thankful for is Archive of Our Own. And so we today are very, very blessed to have Axe of Tekla with us, who is one of the volunteers specifically on the committee that deals a lot with archiving, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But we are so excited to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us. And we who work at the archive are also very thankful for it.
Well, that's exciting. We are big stands around here. So glad to know that those of you guys who spend all of your time doing it are as well. And please, on behalf of all of us, let me thank you and your colleagues for, I'm sure, the hours and hours and probably decades of your life that you feel like you have given to this. So thank you so much. I would love to know how you got into fandom and what fandoms you are active in now, if you wouldn't mind kicking us off that way.
Absolutely. So I was always a pretty nerdy kid, but I got into fandom, like many people my age, through Harry Potter. It was the year 1999. This was back when Google was like the new kind of weird kid on the block of search engines.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, we were all kind of scared of it. We still use like Netscape and stuff. Yeah.
Oh my God, Netscape. I'd forgotten about that. So I was using Yahoo, which, if you remember, it had, you didn't only have the option to search, you could also browse categories. So I, you know, go in and, you know, literature, children's literature, Harry Potter. And among the list of sub categories, there's fan sites, and then there was fan fiction. So I clicked on that, and the rest is history. I've been a reader and a writer, not so much a poster, but still, ever since.
And is Harry Potter still like your primary fandom? Is that kind of how you are still active? Or are you in other things now?
I would describe myself as a serial fandom monogamist. I still occasionally go back to Harry Potter, but most of the time I have a thing that I'm really into for like anywhere between a couple of weeks and a few months. There are a few things that I keep going back to. So the Star Wars prequel trilogy, Tolkien, Yu-Gi-Oh. Over the Garden Wall, I always get into it towards October, November. It's so seasonally appropriate. Avatar The Last Airbender, just finished a rewatch with friends, so.
Oh, nice. My co-host Ferret loves Avatar. So I've not encountered it yet, but it's on my list.
It's very good. I will not squee further.
Okay, I'll come back
to spare you the gushing.
I love the idea of serial monogamy, by the way. We have a friend of the pod, Ashes0909 is her username, and she's also a serial fandom monogamist and kind of gets really into things. And it's not kind of how I experience fandom, but I love hearing from you guys. I think I'm too ADD with it. I keep dipping in and out of other things. So I love hearing from folks that are like, no, I want to wholeheartedly love something for about 10 days. And then I would like to wholeheartedly love something else for 10 days. It seems like you guys get to experience a wider breadth of fandom than I do. Whereas I just like now know Tony Stark's shoe size, you know, like it's this like really kind of intense deep dive. And it's a totally different way to experience fandom. And I love the breath that us nerds have to love something so deeply.
Indeed. I cannot agree more.
Yeah. So what kind of, talk me through how you went from writer and consumer to, you know, being on staff of one of the guardians of fandom freedom, I guess. Like, can you talk me through that process?
So I was actually on LJ, and I was around for Strike Through / Bold Through and the FanLib thing. And I didn't get involved in the Organization for Transformative Works or the creation of the archive right away, because I was in college and then I was in grad school and then some other stuff was going on. But I was a fairly early member of the AO3, or I had a login fairly early on in the beta, and it was so much better than fanfiction.net or than trying to find things on LJ that I moved almost completely and never looked back. You know, every so often I go back and try to remember the series of links to get to that one series on LJ that hasn't moved, but it's really good, or something like that. But, or you know, there's a pairing or a fandom that's very small. And so one braves fanfiction.net to see if there's anything else there that's worth reading. I have found a couple of my favorite fics that way. So,
well, that's encouraging to anyone listening who still posts there. I know we make fun of it a lot, for ill or for better. So I'm glad to hear that there's still some good stuff happening there.
There is. I know several writers on AO3 still cross-post to fanfiction.net, and they do have different readership.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. The experience that we talk about in Marvel fandom the most is a difference in tagging.
Yes.
And so I'm sure if you're somebody who doesn't maybe as value the tagging system as much, we talk about it a lot in the fandom spaces I'm in as like a safety measure, almost like an emotional safety mechanism. If that's not as much of a value to you, I can see why fanfiction.net still works for you in a lot of ways. But if the tagging is really important, I would imagine, at least for me, that's one of the reasons I don't go back to FFN, because I don't love surprises as much. I kind of like knowing what I'm getting into. So that's kind of my preference, but I can see if it's not a value to you, it wouldn't be yours.
Well, I think they also have an app, and I believe the app has a built-in screen reader.
Oh, that's different than, yeah, and I don't want AO3 to ever have an app, so you guys don't have to censor anything. So yeah, but they do censor quite a lot, so that makes sense that they can have an app.
Yeah, so we're talking about how I got involved in volunteering. So I'd been a user of AO3 for many years, and in October, November of 2013, there was a call that went out for volunteers for the Open Doors Committee, which, you know, do you want to rescue archives and rediscover old fic? And I kind of thought, and help save fandom history. And I thought, yeah, I want to do that. And I don't have a whole lot on my plate at the moment, so I applied. I didn't get in that initial run, but a few months later, in preparation for importing the Yuletide archives, they needed a few more people, so I was invited to join then. I believe it was April of 2014, and I've been a volunteer ever since. At this point, I actually double-checked with our chair. I am the second longest serving member of the Open Doors Committee. Specifically, one of our co-chairs was one of the people who brought me on, and the other came in and with the next round of recruiting.
Okay. And so that's amazing. So clearly you have seen a lot and seen a lot. I'm sure even some really evolutions in fandom. If we think about fandom technology from 2014 to now, and obviously the Tumblr purge, which we've talked about on this pod a lot, and some of the movements of fan art, I'm sure you've seen a lot. But I want to go back really quick to something you mentioned, because I don't think I know what that is. What were the Yuletide archives?
Oh, so Yuletide is an annual Fanworks exchange. It was initially organized by Astolat and I'm afraid I can't remember the other couple of folks off the top of my head, but Astolat was also, of course, one of the OTW founders, and also wrote the automated archive software, which was a predecessor to the AO3 software. So Yuletide is a Fanworks exchange, and it's specifically for small fandoms, and small fandoms are defined by number of works between AO3 and fanfiction.net, and it's a way to encourage some really unusual fandoms to get some works. Some of the fandoms that started or are pretty much exclusively on Yuletide include the Folgers incest commercial.
Oh my god, I love that there's a fandom for that. Oh my god. Yes, well, I know exactly what you're talking about. We will link it in the show notes. Yep.
Yes, so I think it just came out at the right time that someone proposed it as Yuletide fandom and someone accepted it. And there is fic for it, and it is delightful.
That makes me so happy. Oh, we will link to all of that, listeners. Don't worry.
There is also, you may have heard of this, Ian Nasir.
I haven't, but that doesn't mean somebody listening hasn't.
Okay, so Ian Nasir was a Mesopotamian merchant, sure, and he kept all of his correspondence, including complaint letters, which were later dug up by archaeologists. And people just love the idea that this guy kept all of these letters complaining about how he had sent inferior copper ingots and forced his customer's servant to travel across enemy territory for them, which is just adding insult to injury.
Oh, humans have been salty and petty since the jump. That makes me so happy.
And he kept them. He kept these letters. This is why we have them. We dug up his house. We dug up his files, and these cuneiform tablets were there.
Oh my god. Okay, I am thankful for humanity right now. I'm laughing so hard I'm crying, listeners. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. No, I hadn't heard of it, but now I need to find the Yuletide fandom for it because that sounds delightful.
Yes. So, you see, Yuletide is beloved. It's been going on for well over a decade, and it used to be on its own site. Then when AO3 became able to handle challenges and exchanges, mm-hmm, they moved to AO3 and had been promising for a real long time that all of the works and the comments on the Yuletide site would be moved to AO3. It finally happened in 2014, and because there were years and years of works on this, of course, we needed a lot of people to handle it because we didn't want to just mass import everything because a lot of people had already put their old Yuletide works on AO3, and then there would have been duplicates. And because we were actually importing the comments this time, which almost never happens, it just increases the difficulty multifold. The only reason it could happen this time is that Astolat was writing the code herself and had written the code for the Yuletide site and for AO3. So she knew how to plug them into each other in a way that really no one else could have. In order to avoid duplicates and get the comments that were being imported added to the correct works, we invited people to let us know what the old URL was and the URL of their new works so that we could make sure that they were linked in the code. And obviously, with such a huge archive, they needed a few extra people to handle all of these tickets. So that was why I brought in, and I stayed ever since. That was at the time. I believe at the time it was our largest import. Yeah, so Yuletide was about 7,500 works. Yeah, it looks like HP Fandom, with about 8,500 works, is the largest import we have ever had so far. That was a few years later.
Yeah, that's a lot. So obviously digital archives are one thing to kind of for you guys to import. And I think, you know, folks who aren't familiar with tech, like just trust that that's a lot of work. When Tekla said tickets, that's kind of that's how projects are referred to in IT. So there's a lot of that kind of technical stuff. What about some of the more, like you talk about the physical fan site, the fan stuff, like fanzines from the 60s and 70s. How do you guys kind of go about archiving those and protecting and saving those that are not digital already?
So we have actually partnered with a real world library. The Fan Culture Preservation Project, which preserves physical media, is a joint venture between the OTW and the Special Collections Department at the University of Iowa.
Amazing.
That specifically preserves fanzines and other non-digital forms of fan culture. So for example, con booklets, posters, fan art, just anything physical. It is mostly zines, but pretty much anything physical, and I'm going to go with made with paper.
Okay. Okay. So, Emil, we have some, for instance, we're in the Marvel fandom, we just finished running, as we're recording this, it's starting, but as you guys are listening to this, it's over, far over, Marvel Trumps Hate, in which a lot of people make fan work themed crafts. So they make like mugs with Tony painted on it and things like that. Would those kind of things be wanted in an archive as well? Like what kind of things in a physical archive are important for fandom history?
That is a really good question. I don't think we've had anyone so far offering to donate crafts. That would really depend on the University of Iowa's ability to store and archive them. So I would have to ask about that.
Yeah, I'm just curious, because I think, I mean, like, obviously pottery is a really big deal to archaeologists. So, but when does it become a big deal in the timeline of things, I guess? But particularly, like, interestingly for us at Marvel Trumps Hate, which is a massive Marvel-wide fandom auction, for your knowledge, that where people offer fan works and then people donate money to charity in kind of response to that. And the craft auctions have increased this year in terms of everybody being inside. And people have kind of engaged with their hobby, their fandom hobby and their craft life, like some really pretty embroidery, things like that, that people had never molded before. They were given this chance to be inside and for so long, this chance. And we kind of hyper-focus them. So if I think as an academic, I'm like, well, 2020, I'd want some fandom crafts and kind of see that evolution, because Marvel can't be the only ones doing that. But from I'm not an archivist. I'm a current academic. I study contemporary culture. So I was just curious if there was like a line somewhere that there was a derivation of in terms of what becomes archivable and what is just current trends, I guess.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thought. As I said, I'm sure it depends a lot on the project in question.
Of course.
Because is it someplace, when it comes to crafts, you're then talking about more physical storage space and probably potentially different preservation conditions from things that are on paper.
Yeah. Yeah, my offline best friend, who listeners will know as Soulmate, does a lot with handicrafts made by political prisoners professionally. And the process of things that were made out of like leather or fabric versus things that were made out of paper. And I've learned a bit about that archiving stuff, but certainly not, I'm not a archivist. I don't have that mm-hmm. kind of brain. So that's really fascinating. So then you, as an Open Doors person, do you interact with that fandom, with the University of Iowa, or would that be somebody else on your team? Like, I guess I'm asking if somebody listening has a box of fanzines, like, and they don't really know what to do with them or if they would be useful, how do they get in contact with you guys to help facilitate that with the University of Iowa, or do they go straight to the University of Iowa? Like, how do you guys work with that?
So the best way to get in touch with us is to use the form on our website.
We'll make sure that goes in the show notes.
Yeah, so just in the subject, say something like, I have fanzines. I want to donate, or you can specifically call out the Fan Culture Preservation Project, or the FCPP. There is one member of the Open Doors Committee, Mrs. Potato Head, or MPH, who handles all of the special collections and the FCPP. So we would just ping her on that email and she'd move ahead getting in touch with Iowa and ensuring that people get, you know, have the right address to send it to and can get reimbursed for postage.
Okay.
If that's something that they need or want. And
obviously, even though this is hosted at an American university, you guys are looking at international fandom, I would imagine, knowing archivists. You're not just looking at American-based fandom, is that correct?
Absolutely. I mean, we usually get things from the US and Canada just because the OTW, we're still reaching out. We are very interested in being a place for anyone who wants to be there, but it doesn't mean that everyone wants to be here or that they necessarily think of the OTW or Open Doors as a place that would be relevant to them.
Are you talking about like other cultures? Like is it still a pretty English speaking, like centric, like organization at this point? Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, I mean, there are a few things. I mean, for one thing, frankly, international postage is really expensive.
Pain in the ass. Yeah. It's
so, yeah. So if someone were, you know, not in the US, they might not even think, gee, I should mail this to,
of course,
an American university and not look into it at all. Although, as I said, we are happy to reimburse for postage. So the working language of the OTW is English. Currently, the first language that everything is available in and the only language that absolutely everything is available in terms of our website and such is English. We are working hard, or I should specify the translation committee.
Correct. Is
working really hard to get our FAQs and our other documentation and our website translated into all the different languages, but it takes time.
As we record this, you guys just put out a call for translators. And I know on various Discord servers that I'm on, several of the Marvel fandom folks from those countries and those language bases volunteered and applied. And I know they're really hoping to be helpful.
Oh, that's wonderful. And a thing I should specify, when the call is put out for translation volunteers, they do list teams that are specifically looking for new volunteers or more volunteers. But if you speak a different language and want to ask about that team, or if you speak a language that we don't have a team for yet, like, new teams get started because someone is interested in starting them.
Yeah.
So
I think it's important for all of us to remember too, as you bring this up, OTW is a volunteer organization. It's a nonprofit. And the laws of your nonprofit are pretty much that nobody draws a salary. Like, you guys put all of your costs back into server running and a lot of the tech costs. And for anyone listening, please remember that the OTW is incredibly transparent with their budget. And, you know, you can always look at it yourself. But I think those of us on the outside of an organization as big and as slick looking and professionally behaving as OTW forget that fundamentally it's a volunteer situation, which means that if you have a skill that can be used and it's a hole not being filled, one of somebody on you being the listeners, somebody on you being OTW probably wants to hear about that. And it's not, if there's a language being excluded, it's not out of prejudice, it's out of availability. And so bridging those gaps is an important part to make this a whole fandom experience, but we all have our own limitations as both human beings and organizations. I know we here at Pod on the Suit talk a lot about how do we get it to be more accessible to more people. So like, we're doing more transcripts because transcripts are easier to translate than audio. And we're trying to do a lot of that kind of thing, but it's difficult. And arduous. And so anybody that can think in both languages and write and communicate in multiple languages is a true gift. First of all, you're a genius, as far as I'm concerned. But remember that if something isn't available, it isn't because somebody hates your culture necessarily, which is sometimes the language I see on Tumblr where everybody is angry all the time. It's probably just that somebody else hasn't said yes yet. So, you know, think about it that way, as we're all thinking about how we can contribute to the perpetuity of fandom.
Yes, there are so many times that we have run into a bottleneck because there's only one person who can do the thing and they're getting married this month or something like that. As we grow, we are really working hard to build in redundancies and make that kind of thing not happen. But for example, when I was helping import turkfanfiction.net, the archivist wound up doing most of the translations for their announcement posts and such themselves, because Team Turkish only had one translator at the time, and translations rules were that you had to have a second person to double check things.
Right. Yeah. So it's all human. It's all human stuff. Like, we see it in every fandom event I've ever been a part of or run, and not only in Marvel, but in other fandoms, but then also just volunteers. Like, I sit on a lot of boards of nonprofits, and there's always people that are like, why don't you do this? As though we've never thought of it before. And you're like, no, I thought of that. There's actually only 24 hours in a day. And most of us only have most of us have other jobs. we're trying to be mean here, folks. This is a, we can all only do so much. So it's always a balance. It's always a balance. So speaking of like the Turk archive and kind of things like that, I mean, obviously there's a lot of things like that going on behind the scenes that we don't necessarily know about. And not that you have to tell us, but as we're kind of sitting here in our little Marvel space, I guess, how can we be helpful to your committee besides if we've got fanzines sitting in a basement? You know, is there outreach we can be doing? Are there just things you would like us to be aware of? You know, if we post stuff on Tumblr, would you like us to also post it on AO3 so you guys have it fully archived? Like, what kind of fan behavior would be helpful to you guys?
Well, one thing that I do want to make clear about the Open Doors Committee is that we're not going out and finding archives to rescue, partly because of personnel limitations, but more significantly, because the Open Doors Committee is part of the Organization for Transformative Works. And that means that the values and the priorities of the OTW dictate what Open Doors can do and how we do things, which means essentially that where other preservation projects like the Yahoo Group's Fandom Rescue Project put preservation first, and when Yahoo Groups was going down, they were just trying to save absolutely everything that they possibly could, partly because of speed, but also because, you know, that really was intended to be an archive, a repository of large amounts of information that could be studied en masse. Whereas the OTW and Open Doors put a priority on creators having control over their works. And so we feel that when a moderator contacts us, a moderator or an archive owner contacts us to move their, to import their archive to the AO3, that's very similar to if they were switching servers or changing the URL. They have been given the responsibility for keeping these works online, and moving them to AO3 is a way to do that. But we have an outreach period. We try to email people directly if possible. We really make a lot of efforts to ensure that if people don't want their works imported, they can contact us and tell us so. And that when the works are imported, creators can very easily get control over their works and delete them or orphan them, move them to their own, their regular accounts, move them to a secondary account so that they can do whatever it is they want to do with their works because they are theirs. So back to my original point, what this means is that Open Doors cannot rescue archives if we are not alerted to the fact that that archive needs help, and more particularly if the moderator or owner is not interested in working with us or isn't interested in giving permission for someone else to work with us on their behalf.
That's an incredibly important point that I'm really glad that you spent the time unpacking about the idea of consent, and also just the focus that while the archiving is very, very important, the primary entity of OTW is the protection of creators and our control over our own works. And just as a reminder to everybody listening, you know, Farrah and I have talked extensively in other episodes about where that came from and why that value is so sacrosanct to OTW. And they've also been open about that too. So feel free to dive on into their website and swim around and find out what they've said. But when we think about cultures, which we talk about a lot on this pod, about, you know, cultures of Discord servers, cultures of fandom, cultures of ships, cultures of everything, a huge part of the culture of OTW is always going to be to protect us as creators. And so that is a different thing, which is why they're not, you guys just heard Tekla say, they're not going to go out and start hunting around Tumblr for like dying hashtags. Like that's not their gig. That's not what they're looking for. They're much more interested in making sure that people have their own control. So part of a dying archive means that, as we've talked about in the past, creators lose control of their works. So in doing that work, you know, what we just heard Tekla say was that it's just as much about making sure that creators have perpetual control as it is about making sure that that people can read it forever, which I know is difficult for some people whenever an AO3 user, especially a big name fan, decides to delete their account and all their works. And that is, you know, heartbreaking and all those kind of other emotions that fly around Discord servers and Tumblr and Twitter whenever that kind of thing happens. But it is incredibly important to remember, you know, please keep this interview in mind whenever that kind of thing happens. The number one priority is always the creator's control of work. And we want to protect that. And we want, as fans, we want that to stay in place. So as grievous as it is when something disappears, it's not worth sacrificing the consent of creators for automatic archiving, I guess. Mm-hmm. So kind of hold those two things in tension. But yeah, man, we've had a lot of deletions recently in Marvel fandom and people are really upset about it. I don't know if that's happening in other fandoms, but we've been struggling with it a little.
Oh, that's really sad. I do want to, in that case, let people know that there is on AO3 an option called orphaning. And what this means is that essentially you transfer your work to an orphan account, which is just a general account. It comes under orphan account. You can either take your name off of it or not. So it can be orphaned and anonymized or just orphaned. Some people choose to do this if they're leaving fandom and don't want to kind of have that dangling AO3 account that someone could, for example, hack or just get into later, or they just, for internet security reasons, don't want to have an account that they're not using, which is good internet security. So you could then orphan all of your works but keep your fandom name on them. If there are works that you're staying in fandom, you know that people love this work, you don't necessarily want it on your account with your name attached anymore.
Yeah.
You can orphan and anonymize. The one thing to be very, very clear on, though, is that any changes, I mentioned some personal information in the author's notes of that one chapter, any of that, you have to do that before the works are orphaned, because once they are orphaned, it is almost impossible to get them back because all of the creator information has been stripped from them. And so support can't, it is very difficult for the support team to confirm that those works are in fact yours.
Fair.
And if they can't confirm that, then they can't give them to you because
They can't do anything because you could just be a total jerk and trying to mess with someone else's fix. So that's always
important.
Yeah. So that's, you know, something we kind of remind people of all the time. But I think it's interesting in fandoms that are in transition, which I think Marvel definitely is. It wouldn't surprise me if that happens a lot. But back to kind of like, now that we've kind of covered creator protection and everything else, as fans, is there anything you'd like us to know or any kind of fan behavior you'd like us to have to, you know, make the work of the Open Doors Committee easier? Anything we should, is just being aware of you enough? Is that what you ask of us? Because we're happy to do that.
Yes, the Open Doors Committee is one of the smaller projects, and I think that what we do is really cool. We have so many small and old archives that are really important parts of fandom history that have been rescued, and I think people should check them out for a perfect time capsule of slash writing in right around 2000. There's an old archive called the Chains Archive that was imported, I want to say around 2015. It was one of the earlier ones that I was involved in. And what was really special about it was that it allowed slash and it allowed BDSM and all that kind of thing at a time period where a lot of fan archives didn't, because they were really worried about adult content and about getting in trouble for hosting it. This, of course, being the days before we owned the goddamn servers.
Yes, owning the goddamn servers is pretty much the battle cry. That's what we've got to do these days. So, yeah.
Yes, and it just makes me really happy that it's still here, that it hasn't just vanished from the internet. A bunch of things. The Sentinel archive was a fairly early import, again, because Astolat was involved with it and it was on automated archive. So that was one of our earlier imports. And you, Flame, will be very excited, I'm sure, to know that we are importing several West Wing archives.
It would be wonderful to get control of some of my stuff back if it's on there.
Well,
poking around.
Do you remember West Wing Fan Fiction Central?
Oh, do I? Yes, there's definitely some of my stuff on there. Oh, that's exciting. I'm actually very, fairly proud of some of that stuff, so. There was a Josh Donna archive that died a death, and I hope it did forever, because there was a lot of crap on it. But that's exciting. There was a lot of really good fic on there.
And one of the really cool things is that West Wing Fan Fiction Central had itself rescued the West Wing Fan Fiction archive.
Yes, I remember that. That's amazing. Yeah.
And the Big Block of Cheese, which was a slash archive.
They did. Oh, that's so exciting. I didn't write slash at the time, so I didn't really pay attention to that one. But oh man, that's so exciting. It's a really important thing because that fandom was pretty harsh to slash fic. So I which is interesting for a whole host of reasons. We can talk about it another time. But I'm really excited that you guys have done that. Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, and I mean, I myself have discovered new fandoms through this. It seems like nobody cares about Blake 7 anymore, but I
don't know what that is. God love you. I'm glad you enjoy it.
It's an old British sci-fi TV show that basically looked at Star Wars, A New Hope, and Star Trek, and said, but what if cynical?
Oh, so you just mean like every British show from the 80s. Got it. No problem.
It was, in fact, from the 80s, now that you mention it. And so it's
Mr. Flame is a massive Red Dwarf fan, which is pretty much like that kind of conversation. Like, what if we took this but made it a bunch of assholes? So yeah, I
yeah, it's more like, what if the, you know, multi-planet hegemonic government was not benevolent?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's exciting. So like Futurama came from this place, essentially. So this, like, I mean, maybe not directly, but if we talk about like cultural heritage, oh, that's exciting. Okay, I'll see if Mr. Flame ever watched Blake 7. He grew up in the UK in the 70s and 80s. So I will have to ask him if he ever watched that. But you found that because of your archive gig.
Yes, because there were a couple of small archives that we were importing, and my real life job was very light at the time. So because they were so small, I basically just imported them all myself, even though it was a what we call a fully manual import, which is when, so there are varying degrees of automation that we can apply to imports. And we do try to focus them on the larger archives. But if an archive is no longer online and it's small and it would be kind of more trouble than it's worth to write the code to put it into the format that could then be plugged into the AO3 importer backend and imported that way, we do a fully manual import, which is basically the same thing as when you are adding your own fix to AO3.
Do you have to come up with the tags too? Because that's most of that's tags, summaries, and titles are what stress us all out the most.
We actually have a process for working with the moderators based on the structure and whatever tags were or tagging like elements were available in the original archives to create a list of tags and their AO3 equivalents. Oh. We do not necessarily require the works to be tagged with like the AO3 canonicals. It's also to help the tag wranglers send those tags so that they show up in the right, with the right tag sets later. But yeah, we work with the mods to determine the tags for each work.
That's amazing. That's, the tag wranglers are some of my heroes. I mean, all of you guys are my heroes, but like tag wranglers, man, tag wranglers and the abuse committee. Like, I just constantly want to send them flowers. Like, you guys are doing the Lord's work. Thank you so much.
I actually, most of the time when I have to forward something to support or to PAC, they're the policy and abuse committee.
Policy and abuse now, committee. Got it. Okay. PAC. Got it.
I do include like a picture of flowers or puppies or my inordinately fluffy cat.
Oh God, fluffy cat pictures are life. So I'm with you.
Well, she is very fluffy. So.
Oh, nice. One of our one of the mods of our server has a cat who's like right now going through getting her winter coat. So she's got her summer coat and her winter coat. She's just a walking fluff ball. So it's really, really precious.
So anyway, so I was importing like 150, I think, fix on my own at work.
Listen, we've all done it. I own a company and I write fic at work. There is no shame. So you're fine.
And I just, you know, in the process of reading all of these summaries and kind of skimming the page to make sure there were no egregious typographical errors that I should delete before posting, I went like, wow, this show sounds really cool.
I love it. I love it.
And it has a really great fandom, actually, kind of one of those things where the only people who are still there and the only works that have been preserved are the really good ones.
Yes. Yeah. That you've gotten rid of you've separated the wheat from the chaff, as it were. So yeah, I feel that.
So then I went and found them on YouTube and
amazing.
Watched them with my roommate cracking up every other scene because It was a BBC sci-fi show from the 80s. Their budget was, you know, pocket change. Yeah,
their budget was about £4 and they filmed it in the middle of Cardiff. Yep, got it. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, and especially for this one, so completely reasonably, they decided to put what budget they had towards their permanent set for the spaceship.
Awesome. Okay.
However, they do not get to that set until well into the second episode.
Oh, yeah. That's so peak BBC. Like, that's so peak. I love it.
Because they're doing all this setup. And so there is this very important scene that is very clearly filmed in a parking garage.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I love the creativity of humans. That, yes, that is so peak BBC. I love it. Spoiler alert, they still do that. So
yeah. And like the camera, you know, the shots are all clear, but the camera almost never moves because they could afford a cinematographer to make sure, you know, to set up the camera so that nothing was blurry, but no fancier than that.
Absolutely not. Absolutely no. Absolutely no.
We cannot afford tracking shots. We cannot afford to zoom in or zoom out. We can occasionally afford a panning shot. Occasionally.
We can remember how far technology and budgeting have come. We can make movies on our phones now, folks. So make sure to go back to YouTube and watch Blake 7 and get excited. So that's amazing. Well, this has been utterly fascinating. I don't want to take up too much more of your time because I could keep talking all day, but you, I'm sure, have archives to import. So before we leave, are there any, maybe it's Blake 7, but are there any fan works or small fandoms, I should say, that possibly we haven't heard of, that in your work as the at the Open Doors Committee you've come across that you'd encourage us to check out?
Oh boy. So I think one of the coolest things that we've done through Open Doors is actually set up a number of memorial archives for writers who passed away and who fortunately had fandom friends who they left in charge of their works and who could organize their import to the AO3 so that they would be preserved and stay up so that people could keep enjoying them. If you go to the Open Doors page on FanLore, on the index you can see a list of memorial archives set up with the assistance of Open Doors. They include the Danelle Lights Archive, the Leah Adesio Archive, and the Dana Knight Archive. And so in the days before you could assign a fandom next of kin for yourself, these folks did it for themselves and had friends that they trusted to do this. And I think that's really great and really special.
Yeah, that is really special. We talked about Fandom Next of Kin on the server a little while ago, but we haven't said it on the pod. So that's an important feature that you guys have, where those of us who don't maybe tell offline life people about our fandom life can make sure that AO3 has the contact details to a fandom friend who knows how to and can get access to your account and kind of make the fandom wheels keep spinning, as it were, if anything tragically happens to you in the offline life. Well, we will definitely be linking all of this stuff in the show notes that you have mentioned, including the memorial archives and, you know, finding and the link to submit things to Open Doors and kind of all that other stuff. So everyone listening, if you're listening in your car, don't worry, you don't have to be taking it. You didn't have to take any notes. We've got it all in the show notes for you. But Acts of Tekla, thank you so much for joining us. This has been utterly fascinating. Like I said, I've got a million more questions, but I will let you go for now. So thanks again. And happy coding.
Thank you.